Hello, my name is Nancy Roxer and this session is Help for Helpers. There is a handout that goes with this and I'll basically be following that. Thank you for being willing to be a helper in our Sunday school. Your role is a very important one. The only way that we could handle a larger class and still give attention and have personal interaction with the children is to break them into manageable groups, so we can direct conversations, ask questions, and make applications. Also, it would be difficult for the teacher to be responsible for all the elements of the class, such as birthdays, bulletin boards, crafts, cleaning, and props. So thus, if we spread out the responsibilities to the team, we can accomplish all the things that happen to make this a great class. However, there is a drawback of having so many people involved. We have four rotating teams in each classroom. So there's a great need for consistency and continuity between the teams. Without direction and a set procedure, we would have a lot of inconsistency and confusion on the adult level. Training takes consistency. That means we all expect the same things and use the same procedures. So that is one of the purposes of this session. We never arrive. We need to evaluate after each Sunday. How did it go? How could I have handled something differently or better, or explained something better? Good educators keep learning and keep improving. In keeping with our church's philosophy, our whole morning is centered on a specific Bible lesson and the aim that we draw from it. We want these aims or truths to be brought across throughout the whole morning. The curriculum does this for us in many ways, but if we're not all working together to facilitate this, we won't be effective. Nothing takes place in the morning that is just a time filler. There's a purpose for each element of the class, and the aim should be woven in and out of everything all morning. The teachers put a lot of time into the lesson, but as helpers, you are key in helping this aim to be reinforced. You work with the children more directly than the teacher does. It is the teacher's responsibility to give direction to the class and keep it moving. Your role is to work with the children in following through by guiding and directing the children. This is not something that you can just show up for, or you will actually be ineffective and hurt the overall cause. So some preparation is needed. I will try to quickly move through each element of the class, its purpose, and what you are responsible for. I would first like to note that there's a big difference in the development of the two classes, the 3 and 4-year-old class and the 5 and K class, and their schedules vary slightly also. For the 3s and 4s, this is often their first structured setting with a group. They're learning to function in a group. A lot of concepts are being laid. And some may be accurate, some may be inaccurate. They need a lot more direction and physical help. A lot of variety, yet consistency. Very important foundations are being laid for other classes to build upon. It reminds me of the verse in Isaiah that says, precept must be upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. That's how the children are learning. So, preparation for yourself. 3 P's, prepared, prayerful, and prompt. Prepared. I will expand on this. Prayerful, being in fellowship and doing this with a love for the children. Prompt, arrive at 9:10 for first session or 10:30 for second session. That would be the normal arrival times unless the teacher requests you earlier for a reason. Now for prepared. The teacher will give you a lesson plan for the month. They will need to be returned, so don't misplace them. Read the entire lesson so you can see the flow. Read the story from the Bible. The earlier you do this in the week, the better. I would suggest right away on Monday. This is preparing you mentally. You can think about the story and the aim all week. Let it stew. Or better yet, read through them on your month off, and then you can be thinking about them that month. You must first understand the truths yourself. Clarify these truths in your own mind first by meditating during the week on the aim and then the application so they become crystal clear in your own mind. It's amazing how the Lord will give you ideas or situations where you can see how you can apply the truths. The aim is always written on the blackboard as a reminder, so glance at it throughout the morning. The next very important element is to know the children you wish to teach. Having knowledge of your lesson and your role is important, but it's equally important to know where the children are in their development, physically, mentally, emotionally, and spiritually, at a given age. Having the knowledge of the characteristics of the age level you are teaching are important keys to that learning level. It enables you to know the kinds of behaviors to expect from normal children and how they think and how they build concepts. This is covered in another session, but I highly recommend that you read about the stages of development in the book Childhood Education in the Church. I would read this every 6 months as a great reminder. If you have a child or a grandchild that age, as you observe them, it will help you. But reading can help you to label and clarify what is happening in their lives. So that's why they say or do that. We recognize that each child does not fit exactly into the expected learning level, but most children do fit into their proper learning level, and it is important for you to know what to expect at that level. Also, getting to know the children as individuals will be helpful to you in your teaching and applications. What concept has he formed about trust or families? A child's concept about God is largely determined by what parents are. But he will look up to you, and you will also influence his understanding of spiritual concepts. What does he understand about God? What is he afraid of? Take personal note and interest in your children in and out of class. You will gain insights and be more relevant in your applications. I would like to briefly cover each age and a few of their main characteristics. I'd like to start with experiences that are meaningful to three-year-olds. Everyday activities are what three-year-olds focus on. They often imitate and pretend that they are a part of the adult world. Experiences that center in the child's room and home are of special interest. They're interested in the care of a baby. They're interested in thunderstorms. They learn fear or courage from parents' reactions. They're interested in community workers, like mailmen, policemen, firemen, and they often imitate them. If they live with a family suffering from undue stress, it is more difficult to appreciate a God of love and kindness. For everything, there is an appointed season. The right time for a child to behave like a four-year-old is when he's four. Being four is not simply a time to get ready to be five. The qualities that come with being four or five are not flaws. Instead, early childhood is the appointed season and the proper time to behave like a young child. We need to be aware of the readiness concept. When a child shows that he's ready for the next step of learning. Here are some characteristics of four-year-olds. Four-year-olds are in rapid growth. They're a whirlwind of activity. They're constantly on the go. Their rapidly developing muscles need exercise. Legs and arms are developing more than fingers. their bodies demand movement. They actually hurt when they're required to sit still for long times. Wise teachers alternate physical activities with quiet ones. Fours are curious. They want to know and are eager to learn. Four-year-olds have discovered that they can put thoughts and ideas into words and people will listen. Powerful. They use these skills almost constantly, punctuated with why, how. Sometimes to get information, sometimes to get attention. They need help distinguishing between what is real and what is imaginary. They have a foot in both worlds. They have a limited comprehension of time and space. They understand today and yesterday. So the expressions a long time ago and far away are adequate for Bible stories. This is very important. They are literal minded. They accept the words they hear to mean exactly that. Symbolism and figures of speech are extremely confusing. For example, a teacher asked a child to draw a picture of Adam and Eve. He drew Adam and Eve in a car, and he said, "This is Adam and Eve when God drove them out of the garden." We need to be consciously literal because children will understand them exactly as they hear them. A child regards light as light, not spiritual revelation. The young child thinks of Jesus as a person, not the bread of life, the way, or a door. Building his house on a rock means a geographical location. Strive to be concrete and specific. Say things like, "We know Jesus will do what he says," not "have faith in Jesus." This is very important in our conversations. One of the four's most heartfelt desire is to win the approval of those around him, particularly adults. And they often can feel that the end justifies the means. Fours test their world. They need security of limits. Emphasize the behavior you desire. Fours have a simple trust in God and adults. They are beginning to recognize right and wrong. Be sure to be accurate because they can misunderstand words, attitudes, or actions. Some quick characteristics of five-year-olds. Five-year-olds are at a leveling off. Their coordination is much better than four, but they're still full of vim and vigor. They're more skilled, and their play is more purposeful. They often want to demonstrate their physical skills. "I can stand on my toes. Want to see me do it?" Girls are maturing more rapidly than boys. Most fives are starting to print. Praise. But don't embarrass the child not yet able to write. Find other areas to praise him in. Five is an age of intellectual growth. They know the difference between real and pretend in play, but they're not always sure when adults are pretending. They're curious. They're beginning to understand cause and effect. Adults are often fooled by the five's seemingly accurate use of words. They assume that because he uses certain words, he understands their meaning. This is not always the case. Words are not yet the best criterion for what a five knows or understands. That's why we need to build understanding in memorization. Again and again, with conversation, explanation, and pictures, we build the groundwork of understanding. Five's concept of time is confined to the span of a day. Fives exhibit a strong spirit of conformity, so you can use that to your advantage. Adult approval is very important. They identify with adults. They want to be like them and imitate them. Fives are delightful. They generally are helpful and content with themselves. Fear is probably the outstanding emotion that fours and fives live with. They need to fear some things, but we need to be sensitive to not overwhelm them emotionally with details they can't handle. Much of our learning happens before age 5, and it's formed without reading. So think back. How did you learn so many things before you became a reader? How did you learn so many things before you became a reader? Largely through your senses. You watched, you listened, you explored, you had active involvement, you imitated, you absorbed attitudes and values. It's quite an amazing process. You can use this knowledge of your children to be wiser in your dealings and conversations with them. These are important ways to be prepared. We've talked about being prepared ourselves, but you also may be asked to prepare a craft for the children. Have all the pieces cut and the extra supplies needed to complete the craft. Check in the room on the shelves for supplies and let the teacher know if something is low. There should be no preparation during class. Prayer. Pray for children, especially those at your table. Pray for wisdom, patience, and love, particularly for any difficult child. We are very blessed to have large, beautiful classrooms with bathrooms and water close by. Our whole morning rotates between story chairs, tables, and rug time. This gives variety and breaks up a long morning. The tables are color-coded, blue, red, and yellow, as is the rug. The 3- and 4-year-old class has color-coded X's to sit on. If you do not have a facility like this, I would encourage you to try to create varying locations. You could use a rug or a blanket on the floor and move chairs to a semicircle and back to the tables. A balanced program has frequent changes in activities, moving from quiet, then active, back to quiet. We cannot expect children to give us concentration for 3 hours. So I like to think of it as I'm asking them to concentrate and then relax, and then we go back into concentrating and then we relax again. And this is built right into the schedule, but you also need to be aware of that. All of the events have purpose and keep the children busy in a meaningful way even while the children are arriving. So, to start out, be there on time, 9:10 for the first session. You will be assigned certain responsibilities, and these are also typed out on a sheet, such as the Red Helper's responsibilities. One helper is responsible to greet or welcome the children. You would be at the attendance board. Using a cheerful greeting, make each child feel special. You may want to ask if they remember to use the bathroom while their parent is here to take them. You take attendance, and in the older class, you keep track of their Bibles and any individual needs, such as allergies or special needs that they may have, and then you send the child to the table. At the table, they work on making their bags. This introduces the idea and sparks interest in the Bible story. It also makes a bag to keep all their take-homes together. The lesson plan will tell you what to talk about as you work on their bags. If a child comes bursting into the room with something to share, let them get it out at this time. But visiting is not the main goal during this time. Next, after they've made their bag, we move to verses. The first week, you introduce the verse, and you have a little verse card like this. We want to go for meaning of words and not just rote memorization. Each week, we can expect more. We help them as needed. We encourage them to keep working on their verses. We praise for a good job, and they get a sticker for a reward. They should know their verse by week 3 or 4, but this is dependent on their help from home. And then after their verse, they are sent to the rug for a pre-session. I'd like to make a note here that if children come in late, which can happen, these are two things that you would move them through quickly. They would not be able to color their bag. You would not go through a discussion with them. You would have them quickly make it, put their name on it, listen for their verse, and send them to the rug so that they are ready for the pre-session with all the other children. The pre-session introduces the lesson aim, sparks interest in the upcoming Bible story, and prepares children mentally for the background of the story or any terms that they might not know. Many things in the Bible are cultural, but they're not the American way of life, so children need a context. For example, words such as tomb, a rose, heaven, angels, plagues, a shepherd, a king, a priest, a nobleman's son, are not in our culture. Customs such as taking up your bed or washing feet or faraway places like Egypt. This pre-session is a perfect opportunity to explain through objects or pictures unfamiliar words or customs. And then the Bible story can be told without interruptions for explanations of things. You can act things out. One teacher was teaching on Egypt and brought a tub of sand depicting the desert with objects that are in the desert, and then added an object each week to build understanding for the story. She brought library books and showed pictures of objects that would enhance understanding of life in Egypt and the story. You build interest and the setting for the story, and it's a great way to introduce the story. Another story I think of is a child who Jesus heals and they take up their bed and walk. In our culture, we don't take up our beds. So you could have a blanket on the floor and you show them how you roll it up and you get off of your bed and you take up your bed and walk so that that doesn't become an inaccurate concept in their mind. So we're building vocabulary and meaning. Next is story time. Now the children will be directed either by row or individually to go to the story chairs. You may be asked to either send them or to be at the story chairs ready to seat them. Transitions can be difficult, especially for 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds. Sometimes you have to go on the transition with them. They wander, they don't know where to go. Purposely place the children where you want them to sit in the chairs. That way you can break up any bad combinations. You can seat them by size or by habits. So you can just say, I'd like you to sit right here, and you can sit right here. You will sit at the chairs with the children, not behind them, but at the end of the rows where you can keep an eye on the children. Your job is to watch the children and direct them to focus their attention to the teacher, so she does not have to stop at all to correct them. You can correct behavior by just gesturing, like feet down, hands in your lap. And they will get to know your gestures and that you reminded them to do that. Remind a child once, but if he's having trouble remembering, have them quietly come and sit by you. You can just say, it's your job to remember what teacher said. We keep our hands in our laps. After the lesson is done, especially in the 5 and K class, the teacher will tie in the lesson aim to something that they can pray about. This is to encourage them to think and not just rotely pray the same words all the time. So with this aim, God loves us before and after we are saved. We could say, can you thank the Lord that He loves you all the time when you pray? Let's thank God. Or you could say, do you know someone who needs to be saved and you could pray for that person? So you could tie in the request into your aim and then you send the children to the table. Their names are read off as to which table they will go to. So the red table would be dismissed by name. Now, often in that transition of getting sent back to the table, this is a relaxing time, and they're not going to come to the table and remember just what the teacher told them and be ready to pray. You're going to have to redirect them. Now, this is another time where you want to be on your toes and you want to direct them where to sit. So you don't leave the choice up to them. So as they're coming to the table, you can say, I want you to sit right here, or I want you to sit right here, especially if you know there could be a problem. If not, you could let them choose at times. After they're seated, you're going to repeat again. Can you think of someone who you could pray for that needs to be saved? Can you think of someone hurt or sick to pray for, whatever your aim might be? Let's pray about that. And I'm going to have Johnny start. You would pick a child with experience to start. If someone were to pause or shake their head, you can say to them, I'll help you. Pray after me. And keep it simple, one or two lines, and have them repeat after you. If it becomes a choice matter, once one child says, I don't want to pray, you'll probably go right down the line and they'll all say, I don't want to pray. So we want to assume that everyone will pray, and it's amazing how comfortable they get with prayer. Now we need to watch out for other tables because sometimes our table gets done praying before the other tables do and we're going to move to our craft. So we want to observe that and not let them become noisy. So we could say, let's quietly start on our craft now, but we'll have to be quiet because they're still praying. Craft time and guided conversations. When they get back after prayer, when they get back here for craft time, even on the second craft time, it will be basically the same thing. The first craft time will be a craft that has to do with a Bible story that they just heard. And so, if you have several pieces, what you want to do is you want to pass out your main piece first and explain what that piece is. So I might say, don't assume that they know, I might say, this is a treasure chest. Do you know what a chest is? And then discuss that. I'd like you to start coloring it. And then you would pass that piece out. So as you pass out one piece at a time as it's needed, especially with threes and fours, this will save a lot of confusion and time. Now when you present the craft, you want to start with the facts of the story. So as you start in conversation with the children, you're going to review the facts of the story. So you would say, what happened in our story? And what happened next? And make sure that they can explain and think through the order of events and the facts of the story. And after you've discussed that, then you could move to some application. But we don't start out with application. The conversation gives value to the craft. It helps you to know what was understood. It reinforces the lesson, and it teaches some application. Now, guided conversations will be the most difficult thing you will do with the children. And this is always something that we have to keep learning and keep working on. You will learn about children individually and how they think when you have conversations with them. But during this time, we want to keep the conversation focused on the story and the craft. So this is what you need to think and prepare yourself to go beyond the obvious, because you're going to be discussing this with the children. Something very effective that you can do after you've reviewed the story is to share something personal about yourself. They love to hear things that you did or how you acted in certain situations, especially if they can relate to it, such as getting lost somewhere. You'll have their attention immediately. And then what did you do in that situation, and how did the Lord help you? And that makes a wonderful application to your story that they'll probably remember. Now, this is an easy time for someone to get sidetracked, and it reminds them of a movie they saw, or they think of something that they're going to do after church, or something they did last night, and they say it, and the conversation totally shifts over to what they just said. This is where you need to guide it back again, so you can say, you know what, we're going to think about that at snack time. You can share that with us at snack time, but right now, we're going to think about the story and our craft. And you redirect them back to the story and their craft. And then when the craft is all done, you can play with the craft so that you're showing them how to use their craft and tell them to go home and explain it to their parents. So you could say, let's take out your treasure chest and let's put our things in it and talk about what we can do to show the Lord that we love Him. And you go through it. If it's a person who's getting in and out of bed, you can play with it and have them tell the story and then have them do the action with it. If it's a puppet, have them turn to each other and use their craft in a meaningful way so that they can go home and repeat that and do that with their parents and review what they learned. After craft time, it's bathroom break. And so again, now this is a time when they can mentally relax. So we're going to line up for the bathroom. One of the things at bathroom that we want to remember is that this isn't optional. Everyone needs to try to go. The purpose of this is that so during the class, we're not having someone say, I need to go to the bathroom, and then that reminds someone else, oh, maybe they should too. So if they all go at one time, it should drastically cut that out. And so if they say, well, I don't need to go, you can just say, everyone needs to try to go. And then, once you're in the bathroom, you can make sure that they go into a stall. That's as much as you can do, but we can hope for that. And then they should wash their hands. Now, 3 and 4s will need a lot of help with this. A helper will need to be at the sink probably, maybe even pumping the soap, because they're going to want to pump, pump, pump. A helper might need to hand them one towel so they're not wasteful. If they leave the bathroom in a mess, it's a good time to say, I need helpers. We can't leave our bathroom like this. We're thankful for the building the Lord gives us. Let's get this all picked up and cleaned up before we go back to class, so that we're teaching them procedures even at bathroom time. Now, bathroom time is a time to relax, so it's okay to visit, but we're not going to get wild or silly or destructive to the building, so we don't run and holler and kick the walls or anything like that. So after the children go to the bathroom, they line up and they can visit. Now, for the boys, this might turn into a real active physical time. For the girls, this can turn into a clicky time, where maybe they just want to stand by their best friend, or they're comparing their clothes, or they're doing something unkind. And so we need to be aware of this, and we need to cut that off and make sure that everyone is included and that everyone is treated, we can say we're all friends in here. We like to, it doesn't matter who we're sitting by or who we're standing by, because we're all friends. So we try to cut off anything like that. They come back to the classroom and their hands are all washed. And so in this classroom, when they come back, they're ready to eat their snack. And snack is another time when we think of it as a relaxing time. This is this snack has been prepared, again, to fit with the lesson aim. So first you're going to direct your conversation to why we have this snack and how it fits with the story. But then after that, then we can just visit with the children and use this as a chance for them to either discuss what we've learned or anything that they would like to share. Now, while a helper, this is also the transition time for the helpers. So you would find out if your job is either to be with the children in the bathroom or to be setting up the snack in the room so that everything is set and ready to go for the children. So you would need to know what your specific job would be during that time. After snack time, we move to review time. Now the teacher stays and does not leave, and the purpose of this is she's going to review the Bible story. There are children who come to Sunday school who did not come the first session, so they did not hear the Bible story. And so we can't build upon concepts that they never heard. So the teacher stays and reviews the Bible story. Now you would think that the other children that were here would tune out and like, I heard this, but they don't. They love the review, they love the repetition, and they get right back into it again. And this gives an opportunity for the teacher to review and go over the story, especially for the children who just came in for second session. After the review, after the 3 and 4 year old class takes a little rest time and then they have a stretch and exercise time, the 5 and K class does a little action rhyme. This is, the teacher can take many breaks at her discretion. So there may be some Sundays, we can't always explain why, but there's some Sundays where the class is just generally more rambunctious. So they may need to incorporate exercise throughout the morning. Maybe march around the room at each transition. Going to the chairs, we march around the room. So it might not be a set time as much as incorporating it into the morning, or it may be a set time where you do some action things. Sometimes the older children can become silly and invent ways to do things differently, so we need to redirect them to do what the teacher's doing. This might also be a time when birthdays are acknowledged. So that would be up to the teacher. Now, when they go back to the rug time, they have their song time. They would go back. Now we go from a relaxing time or a more relaxed time to a concentration time. The children go back to the story chairs, and you sit with them, and they concentrate on their second story. This would be their Susie, Sammy, or Buffy, Brian story. These are about a story taken from the lives of the children. If you feel like it's not relevant to the children's lives right today, you could change the story so it is more relevant. But the application should be taken from the Bible story that's brought out in the story. So, again, in the craft, when they come back to do their craft, they'll come back to the table, you will guide them where to sit, and they will have a craft that goes with the application story. Now, in one class, they put the gospel right at the end of the story, and they apply it right during the story because this keeps their attention better, which is just fine. You may have a separate gospel time where you go through the gospel. That might vary from class to class. Again, when you're guiding their conversation during their second craft, you want to make application. You could make application to their Bible verse. How does their Bible verse apply in this situation? How would a personal application apply? You can also ask questions like, how would you feel if this happened to you? Or can you think of a time when you need to remember that God loves you, or that someone needs to be saved? And put these applications right into the craft again. And then again, you review, put it in the bags, and we move to the next session. So for the 3 and 4 year old class, they have a post session. This is an activity that's listed in here. You might be given a responsibility to prepare for that, but this is another way that keeps the children busy in a meaningful way. While the teacher talks to the parents at the door, or while the children are dismissed, so that we're not wasting time and the children are busy. Also during this time, there may be a song time. This would take place back at the rug. The children would sit according to their color on the rug, and you would sit with them. You would sing along and enjoy the songs and keep them focused on the singing. If you need to have someone come and sit by you, then if they need to do that, that's a great thing to do to keep them on focus. Transition times. Make sure that the kids are where they should be before you do your specific job of either setting up a craft or cleaning up after the snack. So once the children are settled, then you can go back and do your specific job. If we have a child who's totally new to our schedule, we can't expect them to just know when the teacher says go back to the table that they're going to know what to do. So one of the helpers should just hang with them all morning and give them little clues. Like, this means that we're going to go to the table, and you go with them all morning and direct them. Now I'd like to go over some issues on discipline, so that you feel secure in what you're doing and that we're all being consistent with each other. I'd like to give some reasons why we might have some discipline issues. One reason might be ignorance. Maybe they just don't know what's expected. So we need to state what's expected at that time and make sure they understand it. A second reason could be boredom. Maybe we're moving too slowly. Maybe we're staying at the tables too long and they've been done coloring for a while. Then that's our problem. And so as a teacher, hopefully she will see that and she will be moving the class along so that they're not staying too long in an area and getting too bored. A third reason could be poor attention or distractibility. So the children have the problem of learning to try to stay focused and not get distracted by things. And the last problem would be the worst, would be a bad attitude or just wanting control of the situation. So that would be the most serious. Now, what are some common problems that can happen in class? Well, blurting out, so lack of self-control. Now, they're starting to learn in the 3 and 4 to raise their hand if they want to speak. So that's a new concept for them. By the time they get in 5 and K, that can be expected. It's not fair that some children raise their hands and other children blurt out. And so we want to say, let's raise our hands and just acknowledge when they do. Making noises with their body or their shoes. It's amazing how many ways they can come up with to make noises during story time or quiet times with their Velcro or something that they're wearing or whatever, their feet. And so this is when they need to be reminded. They might not even realize that they're doing that. Talking and visiting. Silliness. Sometimes they just get silly. Not responding to directions. Not being kind to others. I don't want to sit by you. Or statements like that. We need to make sure that our classroom is a safe place emotionally and physically for all the children. Nothing physical is allowed. Even in public school, they would say, that is not allowed. Our rule is that we keep our hands to ourselves. So we need to expect the same thing. If they have a hard time raising their hand and blurting out, and they needed repeated reminders, this would be something that the teacher would mention to the parent, that they they had a hard time remembering that this morning. So maybe that's something that they could talk about at home. One of the ways that we keep track of discipline to see that we're all being consistent and that children aren't falling through the cracks is we keep some cards at the table. And the helper jots down any issue that they might have with the child so that when the next team comes in, they can see, oh, this has already been addressed. And then when the cards are passed off the next month to the new teacher, she can quickly scan them and see, are we making any progress in this area? Or is this something that is repeatedly happening last month and now this month? So it gives a way to kind of keep track between the teams of if there's something that we need to be more consistent with and working on. Another use for them is when the teacher goes to the door to greet the parents, she picks up the cards. And this is feedback that she could give to the parents on areas that the children may need to be helped with or there was a problem. Also, it's great to put down positive things. If they contributed, if they were kind to someone, something cute that they said, parents love to hear positive things too. So you could jot that down and it gives the teacher something to share with the parent that's personal and great to share with them. So that's how we choose to keep track of things here. Now you might think, well, maybe blurting out, that doesn't seem like to be such a big problem. But if we don't nip it in the bud, it doesn't get resolved, and it encourages other children to not bother to raise their hands. So we need to be consistent, and it also becomes very annoying if it becomes a pattern all the time during class where you're being interrupted. So all of these things are there for a reason. So just follow through with the children. If you need them to even come and sit closer to you at the table, that gives you another option. But you can write down these things that happen on the card so the parent can see what's happening. Don't be critical of a child, but rather show love and grace. This is where the importance of wisdom, discernment, and grace are vital. You can always discuss with the teacher after for suggestions on how could you have handled that differently or what should we do next week if this situation comes up. So go to the teacher always and discuss those things if you're not sure what to do. So it's up to the teacher's discretion. When we have new families come into our church, maybe the children, you can tell that they're not used to structure. We're going to show a little more grace and work with them a little longer than maybe a family that you know you have their support and they want to hear the feedback. So that's up to the teacher's discretion. Now I'd like to cover a few miscellaneous items. And first of all, I'd just like to say that the teacher is in charge. And so on any of those issues, the teacher talks with the parents. Helpers never need to go to a parent. And if a parent approaches them and asks, how is my child doing or what happened here, it's best to just defer them back to the teacher and say, you need to talk to the teacher about that. And that way it keeps it to one version. It keeps the teacher in control. And we don't have a lot of confusion. So as a helper, you are not responsible to talk with the parents or to deal with any discipline issues with the parents. The teachers, this leaves you off the hook. It's a hard job sometimes. It keeps a consistent version. And they're more experienced. They have discernment in that area. And most of the time, parents are very concerned how their children are doing, but sometimes it can get a little touchy or emotional. So just recognize your place and leave it up to the teacher. And in all areas, it's the teacher's job to run the classroom and to make decisions. If you have any suggestions or any questions, you need to go through her. So she is in charge. Another thing I'd like to remind you of is there should be no visiting amongst the personnel during class or during transitions. This is very distracting. If you come in as a new team and you start to visit with the team that's in here and the other people are trying to hold the attention of the children. It's very distracting to keep their attention when there's visiting going on. So don't use class time as a time to visit with the other helpers. If one helper were to get tied up and needed to stick with one child all morning, then we would all have to spread out and cover as best you can. And the teacher could also step in and take over a table for you. Another thing to remember is to dress appropriately. Dress modestly. You're representing the Lord. You're representing our church to the parents. Try not to wear jeans. Try to dress up and at least as you would go to a job or something. Another important thing is a replacement. If you're going to be missing a Sunday, you need to find your own replacement within the teams. You need to inform your teacher who your replacement is and when you will be gone. And then you need to inform your replacement what your responsibilities are so that they can come in and take over those responsibilities and it goes smoothly. Barb shared that there have been a few instances where she wasn't aware of the replacement and maybe the craft wasn't made ready or there was a bump in the morning because of that. So you need to be responsible in making sure that your responsibilities are covered. We run off these lessons and they are used on a 2-year cycle. So they are reused again. So when you're done with your lesson, you can return it to the back counter either every week or on a monthly basis. But they should be returned, and that way they're filed and they don't have to recopy them. So it saves a lot of time and paper. Another issue I'd like to mention is that we should also be thinking of confidentiality and protecting people's privacy. So just like there are HIPAA laws in the medical world, you wouldn't want to walk out of class and make comments like, "This child was such a brat today," or "Do you know what happened in class today?" Parents should expect that what happens in class would stay in class, and that no one would be gossiped about or talked about, and then that they would hear about it later. That should never happen. So anything that happens in the class should stay confidential. Meetings are mandatory. If a Sunday school meeting is called, that's mandatory. You need to be there for it. It's for everyone's benefit, and they'll be going over things that you need to hear. So I'd like to thank you for listening, and I'd like to just close with something that I'd like to read to you. Recent educational insights stress the fact that children imitate the persons with whom they live. In so short a time as 1 hour, children can feel your love for the Lord, for His Word, and for other people. Your manner in sharing, your spirit in reproving, your attitude toward your co-workers will all speak of your relationship with God. Children sense all of the intangibles that are an outgrowth of your spiritual life. The children will imitate your words, your actions, but even more, your attitudes and feelings. Recently, an elderly woman, a former Sunday school teacher, received this letter. "When I was a child, you taught by your example as well as your word and deed. Thank you for your influence on my life. My sister and I always thought we wanted to be like you."